I'm Laura Vinroot-Poole. For over 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store in Charlotte, North Carolina. On this podcast, we unlock the stories of people's lives through the stories of what they wore. These aren't conversations about fashion. These are conversations about people.
Everybody wants to know her name.
Pamela Love is a true individual. I've always been drawn to her beautiful hands, which are decorated with tattoos, and her gorgeous jewelry. But more than anything, I'm drawn to her spirit and her open mind. In this episode, we cover everything from the occult and tarot readings to her childhood style in South Florida. I hope this episode might open your mind to new ideas in your life and in your style. How did we meet? How long have we known each other?
So you started carrying my line, I think, in 2010.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't actually meet until I was here for, you know, a holiday, because my husband is from Charlotte, as you know.
Yeah.
But these people don't know.
Right.
So I was here for, I think, Christmas or Thanksgiving, and I was at Earth Fair.
Right.
And like,
because Matt's vegan.
Yeah. And we were food shopping and someone was like, "Are you Pamela Love?" And I was like, "Yeah, I am." And she was like, "I work at Capital. We carry your stuff."
Oh, I know. It was Jenny.
And you have, and she was pregnant at the time.
Yeah.
And she was like, "You have to come over." And so I came over that day, like with our groceries. And that was the first time I met you. And that was probably.
And I totally fell in love with you.
Likewise. And I think that was 2012 or 2013.
Okay.
So, you know, a while now.
I have a theory that I have to really love the designer. Yeah. In order to wear the jewelry and also sell the jewelry and be behind the jewelry.
I think that jewelry is one of the more personal sort of things that you can put on your body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I always say this and I really do believe this. Jewelry is one of the only things that's really fully a choice.
Right.
I mean, you have to wear shoes.
Right.
So of course, you're going to pick the shoes you like, but you can't walk down the street barefoot and you can't walk down the street naked.
Right.
And you need a purse because you can't. I mean, all women need a purse. How else are you going to carry all your stuff around? Jewelry is really one of those things, like, you could take it or leave it. So
yeah.
I think it's really personal for everybody. And I think that for that reason, people really want to know the person behind it. And I think that they want to connect with that person in a different way. And also because I think jewelry is symbolically more personal. You know, you're getting it as an anniversary gift, or it's a wedding ring, or a graduation gift, and it means something and it's going to last forever. So you kind of want to understand who this person is behind the work.
Well, and I also think just because it touches your body.
Yeah, and it touches your body in such an intimate way, which I also like. I think, to get really hippy-dippy about it, I think that the metals have, you know,
powers
to them and medicinal and healing properties to them, which I find very interesting. But I think also you basically have this other person's work touching your body all the time. And I think,
I just can't sell jewelry if I do not love the designer.
I don't blame
you. I don't mean like, I mean love.
I don't blame you.
In clothing, I'm kind of like, oh, he's sort of a jerk, but whatever.
Yeah.
The clothes are pretty.
The clothes are pretty. No, and I think also, I think there's a lot of jewelry out there. And especially recently, there's just, it's such a saturated world. So I think in a lot of ways, it's about the work, but it's also about the person behind the work.
Yeah.
And what they stand for. And, you know, the thought that goes into creating the work, and especially the responsibility portion of it. I mean, we're dealing with materials that are mined out of the ground. You know, where your materials come from is very important, and that they've been sourced responsibly. So I think knowing that it's coming from a person who you respect their values is really important.
I agree. Where are you from?
I was born in Brooklyn. Well, actually, no, that's
straight
a,
out of Brooklyn.
No, that's a lie. Sorry. And I always say it, and I forget that it's a lie. I was born in Queens, and I hate that. No offense, Queens. But my family...
Shout out to Queens!
Yeah, Queens. I was actually... My family lived in Brooklyn, and for whatever reason, my mom went into labor in Queens, and I was born in Queens. And we lived in Brooklyn for 2 years, and then we moved to Florida.
What part of Florida?
It's a town called Coral Springs.
Right.
It is in Broward County,
which My mom's from Fort Lauderdale.
So, yeah. So your mom's from Broward County, too. Yeah. A suburb of Fort Lauderdale. And I lived there till I was 18 or 19. And then I had a brief stint, very brief stint, where I went to the University of Florida.
Wow.
Yeah, wow, right? It was one of those things where my parents were like, you know, I really wanted to go to NYU or something. And my parents were like, well, you have a full scholarship to University of Florida.
And your mother, was your mother an art teacher? Did I make that up?
You made that up.
I did?
Yeah. She's a psychologist.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's so funny. I mean, that would have been really cool if she was an art teacher.
But I think, but you and I do have something in common in that I think our mothers are both very beautiful. And it's a, and they look like they're from Fort Lauderdale. They're
cool. My mom's very blonde.
Yeah, my mom too, really. Yeah.
But
yeah.
But no, she was not an art teacher. She is a psychologist. She's still a psychologist.
That's intimidating.
Yeah. Everything has a name. Everything. Right. Everything that's wrong with you has a name.
Right.
Nothing's just like, you know, like, yeah, this is normal. This is what kids go through. Everything had like a term.
And do you have siblings?
I do. I have a brother.
Older or younger?
He is younger by 2 years, and he's kind of a genius. So I've always been sort of intimidated by his intelligence.
And what does he do?
He is a software engineer and a statistician, and he works for Amazon.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He lives in Florida or no?
No, he lives in Seattle.
Okay. And so you went to Florida.
Oh, yeah.
For so, what? Like, what did you, what were so you doing in high school? Like, what was your thing?
I was super into art.
Yeah.
Painting, sculpting, pottery, jewelry making, a lot of
really?
Jewelry making. I was obsessed with making jewelry.
What medium?
Like any medium I could figure out how to get my hands on. So I took some silversmithing classes. I took some glass classes. And it was really corny. I did a lot of beading and beadwork.
Like, I love beadwork.
You know, all those like crazy intricate like beaded necklaces that where the beads are like shaped like flowers and things. I like taught myself how to do all that sort of stuff.
And so you went, did they have an art department in Gainesville?
They did. I mean, it was really against my wishes. You know, it was one of those things. My parents were like, college is expensive. Mm-hmm. You have a scholarship.
Yeah.
A full ride to the University of Florida. You should do it.
Yeah.
And I did it for one.
It's sensible.
I mean, and it was also what they could afford, right?
Right.
So I did one semester, and it just really, 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 really was not for me whatsoever. I didn't connect, really.
Yeah.
And also I had a boyfriend at the time.
Right.
Who didn't live in Gainesville. And so I basically dropped out of school and like went and lived with him.
I did that too.
In Orlando.
Oh my God. Okay.
Which is horrible. And at the time I worked on my application for film school, and I applied to NYU for film school and applied for student loans and got in and left Florida.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I bummed around for like a year and a half, basically, is what I said, in Florida, and then got to New York. Then I've been in New York ever since.
And went to film school?
I went to film school. I made films. I made a senior thesis film that was so weird, but it's actually on YouTube. So if you like search...
What do you have to search? I want to see
you have to search Pamela Love RSVP. RSVP was the name of the film.
Uh-huh.
And it was about... a weird dinner party. And the host of the dinner party was a man who was half man, half chair.
Oh my God.
A chair man. And he had all female guests and they were all like weird. Like one was half woman, half horse. One was like a woman who had no eyes. One was like a woman who was like a marionette, like a puppet woman. And then one was, this is the weirdest part. One woman was just really obsessed with jewelry and she was wearing so much jewelry.
Was that you?
I don't know what that was, but she, and
were
I
you in it?
No.
Okay.
But I directed it and I didn't even know at that point that I was going to have a jewelry line or that that would be my career. But it was a woman who was so obsessed with her jewelry and she wore so much jewelry that she was just like weighed down by it and she like was constantly adjusting it and fixing it, and it like was all she could focus on. And then
did your mother psychoanalyze it?
No. Thank God. But that, it was weird. It was a weird film. I graduated and it actually won some awards.
Really?
I got like a grant and I was supposed to use it to make another film, but after film school I was really burnt out and I used it to buy clothes.
And where did you buy the clothes? At like Charivari? No, you're too young for that.
No, at this, I mean, it wasn't that much money either. It was like a small grant. I think I just bought like, I was really into vintage. Oh, that was the other thing. In film school, I was obsessed with vintage. And I also had a vintage clothing booth at the Chelsea flea market where I would sell vintage clothes.
Dresses,
a lot of dresses.
Jewelry?
Less jewelry. It was really apparel-based, actually. Huh. But it was like a lot of just pretty vintage dresses, old, you know, shirts, jeans, you know.
Every Sunday?
Saturday? Pretty much every Sunday. And I did it with my best friend, Joanna, who also went on to work in fashion. Huh. And we would, like, buy vintage clothes. We would travel home to Florida and, like, fill up duffel bags. You know,
we'd go to
the Palm Beach, like, Goodwill.
The best.
And find stuff. And then we'd come back and, like, we'd sit out from, like, 6 in the morning to, like, 6 at night at the Chelsea flea market. And every designer used to come. And the designers would come at, like, 7 in the morning.
I love that.
And they'd buy everything.
Who was the most exciting person that you met doing that, designer? Or
I think it was, I mean, at the time,
inspiring.
I think it was, like, Anna Sui.
Oh,
you know?
Cool. Yeah. Super cool.
And I don't know if you remember Alice Roy, but I remember Alice Roy, who ended up becoming a good friend of mine.
Aww.
But she came and she bought a bunch of stuff. And I remember being like, that's Alice Roy. And she bought all my stuff. We were very serious about it. Like, we had, like, really cool tags that we would make. And, like, each tag would come with, like, a little trinket. Like, we made it really, like, stylized.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, like, a bunch of vintage clothes. Like, we really, like, made it cool.
What was it called?
It didn't have a name. It was just like Pam and Joanna's Vintage Clothing Booth. So,
and then how did you meet Francisco Clemente, and how did that happen?
I was working at Barney's, actually. So after college, I floated around and I had some different jobs. And I was working at Barney's.
In sales?
This is not a position that exists anymore. The Women's Designer Trunk Show Coordinator.
Oh my God. That's a hard job. Just...
Yeah, it was a different time. It was like pre-Instagram, pre-everything, pre-the way people shop. And we would do these really crazy trunk shows.
So you arranged their travel or their schedule as to you'll be here from 10 to 12.
I didn't even do that. That was the crazy part. I mostly dealt with the women who were ordering and then making sure that their orders got placed and that the product came on time. And like when the designer was there, making sure that they had everything they needed. I think the highlight for me was when Albert came for 3 days.
Oh, my God.
And honestly, hearing him speak, just like my hairs on my arms stood on. Yeah, I think he's really one of the most magical, genius human beings. And it was an insane experience for me to work at Barney's at that time, which ended up, you know, for me, you know, Barney's is one of my main points of sale and, you know, like family to me. Working there at that time and meeting the designers that I met and the clientele that were supporting, you know, it was almost like they were like patrons of the arts. You know what I mean? And they were supporting, like, you know, it was very early for Proenza and all of that. And I think that being able to be there for that was such a cool experience.
Well, I mean, even the film school, the Chelsea flea and the Barney's part, I mean, those are all such incredible training.
And so then through all of that, I had a friend who I had had since I moved to New York. Stefan is his name. And his closest friend, he grew up in New York City, and his closest friend was Nina Clemente, Francesco's daughter. And at some point, I somehow met Francesco at an event, like at something where we were all there. And I had minored in painting in college, and at this point was really painting a lot in my free time. Yeah. And I just said to him, hey, do you need an assistant? And I was thinking I would just like maybe be able to do this on the side on top of working at Barney's. And he was like, yeah, I do. Can you start tomorrow? And can you come every day? And so I had to resign from Barney's because I just felt like this was an experience that I couldn't miss.
Yeah.
And so I ended up working with Francesco for a really, really long time. In fact, I still help him sometimes.
Yeah. And you've told me this. And one of the things that you work with the pigments.
I create the colors. So that was a big part of the
process.
Which
is so interesting too, Pamela, because I think that just to think about talking about the raw materials and mined materials and pigments are mined
too. Yeah. Lapis, cobalt, all of that stuff.
Unbelievable.
So, and he really likes complicated colors. And so I, you know, worked full time for him for many years and at the same time started my business out of his studio. And he was super, super encouraging and supportive of me going into jewelry as a creative medium and allowed me to like spend as much time as I needed on that. Mm. But the colors and working with his colors and helping him to create his palettes was really for me, I think of jewelry as painting in a way too. You're painting with stones, you're painting with metal. And so I think for me, and even the thematic elements of his work, you know, I was so interested in some far out weirdo stuff, you know, very interested in like the, you know, tarot and the occult and like, you know, the spiritual side of things. And I found that he was exploring a lot of that in his paintings. And so it made me feel more comfortable to explore that in my jewelry,
wow.
which in the early days was very much the focus of it.
Yeah. And was really out there.
Really out there.
I mean, it isn't, but it was at the time.
But
wasn't
I think
it?
For it was at the time, and I think to this day, some people will always think of me as the girl that created like those like kind of really dark things. But you know, you grow up and you change.
I don't think that those things are dark. Do you?
I don't think they were dark. But
do you think the occult is dark?
No.
Yeah.
But I think at the time, my father had passed away right when I started my line, mm-hmm. and I think I was working through the ideas of death and mourning and celebrating.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that was sort of worked out in the work. So maybe there was a little bit of that in the work. And Francesco was always working through things like that in his paintings. So I felt like very validated in sort of exploring these things in a way that was more mainstream than it was okay to explore those ideas through jewelry that would probably end up at a store,
right?
You know, as opposed to like just something that you would make for yourself.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was a great sort of nourishing environment to be able to start my line, you know, while working with him and working from his studio. It was really special.
And he officiated your wedding.
Yeah, he officiated my wedding. Yeah, he became like my mentor. So even now, if I'm having a rough week and I'm like, I need to talk it out, like I go over to the studio and I talk to him, or he reads my tarot cards.
Oh, he reads them too?
We both read tarot.
Did you study or do you read them?
I actually taught myself at camp.
Really?
When I was 13.
Dang it. I wish my camp had
that. And then they didn't have it. I bought a book and I got some tarot cards and I brought them with me to camp. And I practice and practice, and then all the girls would like come to my bunk and get their cards read.
I love that.
And I've been doing it ever since.
Tell me about your tattoos. They're so beautiful, but the one string around your finger has always been my favorite.
This one? Oh, the little bow on my finger. I got this when I first met my husband. We were in a long distance relationship and we were going through a particularly rough patch. And I got this tattoo to remind me of him and to remind me of what's important.
I love.
And so although it's like really blown out and looks terrible now, the tattoo that I got for him.
It's
so
still it's really pretty.
Really special. And the first one was the phases of the moon behind my ear, but it doesn't look very good. It looks actually terrible.
From the same person mostly?
No, all different. And a lot of the early ones are really, really, really bad.
Is the same kind of like we're talking about jewelry? Do you have to love the tattoo artist that...
I think you do, but at the time I didn't know
that's
that.
That's such an intimate thing.
Well, now I only get tattoos from two people, and both of them are people I really, really, really love and really admire their work.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, I would go to anyone, anywhere. I'd be on like a road trip in New Mexico, and I'd be like, let's stop at this random tattoo parlor and get tattooed.
So it was more about...
the experience.
Yeah, but remembering...
Yeah, remembering an experience. But there are definitely a few now where I'm like, oh, this looks so bad. And I'm also done. I've stopped.
I did know that.
I've stopped. I reached a point where I was like, okay, I have enough tattoos where like I have tattoos, but I'm never going to be one of those people that's like covered in tattoos.
What did your mom say?
She hates it. Every time I see her, she's like, no more.
No.
And I'm like, I promise I'm done. But you know, I look at other women who have like similar tattoo aesthetic to me where they have like similar placement and like just little things. Like I look at Florence Welsh and she has such beautiful tattoos and like they just look so perfect with like her Gucci gowns. Yeah. And I'm like,
well,
that's what I want to look
but
like.
They look like jewelry on you, I think.
And a lot of them are inspired by jewelry. So I think that for me, they are kind of a form of adornment, permanent adornment.
Do you have a favorite? I have a favorite, but I haven't seen your whole body.
What's your favorite?
That one.
Oh, the bow. Right.
The bow,
you told me
sure.
the bow. So,
it's my daughter's favorite too. We talk about it all the time. I'm always like, my
you're like,
Pamela,
don't
like,
get that.
But she's always like the one with the bow around her finger.
I don't know if you remember this, but a few years back, instead of doing a Fashion Week presentation, we did the pop-up tattoo parlor at Milk for Fashion Week. And we invited everyone to get tattoos instead of seeing the collection. And people did not understand that it was an actual tattoo parlor.
Oh,
so like we had people coming and they thought they were making an appointment or they thought they were coming to see a show. But most people got it.
And did they like get it? Like literally they got tattoos?
We tattooed 45 people during Fashion Week. It was trending on Twitter, which I didn't know what that meant at the time because I didn't even have Instagram or anything yet.
I love it.
I did, but I think someone else was doing it. Right, you know what I mean? Right. Someone on staff. It was not yet something on my radar. And lots of cool people came, and I remember at the time I was very – Erin Wasson came, and I was like big fan of her tattoos.
Yeah.
And I was like so excited. But I think that I got a couple tattoos those 2 days that I think for me are my favorites, not because of the actual tattoos, but because of like they remind me of such a fun, exciting, happy time in my business.
Yeah.
And being surrounded by such awesome people and so many people that were like willing to like take this journey with me and do something stupid. That was like not expected.
And had you planned them out? I mean, and every one of them, have you planned out? Are you sort of like the next one I get, I'm going to do this? Or is it more in the moment?
But there's a lot that have been in the moment. A lot.
Yeah.
Of really just dumb in the moment.
Does Matt have tattoos?
Matt has so many more than me.
Oh, really?
He's like covered.
Oh, I didn't know that. But I guess I've not seen him unclothed either.
He's not like me. Like most of my tattoos, it's really funny. Like I have a lot of tattoos on my hands and like on the side of my neck. And then, like, when I'm naked, there's not that many. He's, like, the opposite. He's, like, if he's wearing clothes, you don't see much of anything. But then his whole body is covered. He's, like, the reverse.
Back to the occult. You were in a band called Scorpio Rising. I love that. Are you Scorpio Rising?
No, I'm a Pisces like you, and I'm a Leo moon and a Cancer rising.
Ah,
it was named
very
after...
Very watery.
Yeah, I know it was named after a Kenneth Anger film, because I was also still like very obsessed with experimental film at the time. So it was named after a Kenneth Anger film. Kenneth Anger was one of my favorite experimental filmmakers, and he had a film called Scorpio Rising. And the girls in my band were all very cool with that. And I think two of them were actually Scorpios.
And what did you play?
I play the drums. Drums are so fun.
I know.
They're
the
most fun.
I love when girls play drums.
I mean, I do too. And also, to be honest, I just was very bad at playing the guitar. I just didn't have that skill. I didn't have that part of me. You know, I tried. I took guitar lessons in middle school and I just wasn't good at it. And so I found the drums, and it was really a wonderful stress relief too and super fun. And I really, you know, I played in a couple bands, and, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was like very involved in like the Brooklyn music scene and all of that. And I loved it and it was fun. But at a certain point, the business started to really become a thing, and I just didn't have the time anymore. I would come home from work and we'd be having band practice. And I was just like, I can't. I'm so tired.
No.
And then...
It's a lifestyle. I mean,
It just became something that didn't fit anymore in my life.
Did you have, like, a look?
We were all, like, really... It was like, you know, when I first started the line, it was all, like, grungy and, like, cut-off jean shorts. You know, like, the very, like...
And your hair was
so long
and
with bangs and like lots of jewelry, like pounds of it, even when I was playing the drums. But no, we had a very specific look that is so not me now, but it was like, you know, 22.
And so how did your style change when you left the band? Did it?
I think it took a little while for it to evolve. I think over the years, I just became more interested in apparel and as I became more interested in it, I think I was gravitating to things that were more austere in a way. Mm-hmm. Like I've never, like, I think in my 20s I dressed a little, I don't want to use the word slutty, but I'm going to. Is that okay?
Sure.
Like really short cutoff jean shorts and like a Bob Dylan t-shirt with like the sleeves cut off and, you know, just
that sounds cool. That doesn't sound slutty. That sounds awesome.
I mean, and combat boots.
Yeah.
And then like I really started to get into things like, you know, Dries Van Noten and Yoji and, you know, old Margiela.
Yeah.
And I started to find that I was really interested in this idea of being covered more than showing everything.
Yeah.
And I think that in a way that's a lot more interesting.
For sure.
And I became a lot more interested in the quality of the garments. And I also became much more interested in this idea of not over consuming and making sure that when you were spending money, that you were spending money on things that would last a long time and that had a lot of meaning, as opposed to going to like Zara and just buying a bunch of stuff.
Do you think it had something to do with jewelry and that the jewelry influenced the clothing? And
I think so, too. I also think for me, I often said to people that clothing became sort of like the backdrop for the jewelry. And so as such, I didn't want it to be. I wanted something that really like was a good canvas for the jewelry.
Yeah.
And I think that simplicity is important for that.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you can dress any way you want. Like, I'm very into Gucci right now. I love the decadence of it. It's so fun. But, you know, I'm also very drawn to things like The Row and Phoebe Philo Celine, of course.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
I went to an event this weekend. My daughter said, oh, my goodness, you look like a nun. And I was like, great.
I know. That's such a good look. I know. Happy. Whenever someone's like, you look very Amish today, I'm like, thank you
so much.
Yeah. I think that Amish women, Amish men, Hasidic Jews.
Yeah.
Really good style.
No, I do too.
Separatist religions have really good, or separatist groups in general, tend to have really beautifully tailored sort of looks.
Yeah.
You know, caftans and those kind of long, simple, like Mandarin collars. I love things like that.
Well, I think that it does relate to jewelry because I always believed that jewelry is about bringing light to your face.
For sure.
You're such a storyteller with your jewelry. Were you a storyteller and were you spiritual as a child? I mean, the storytelling and the spirituality, I think, go together.
Well, I think I've always been sort of a storyteller. And I think I wrote a lot growing up. I was really into creative writing. And in film school, I wrote a lot. That's always been something that's been interesting to me is telling stories. And so I always thought of the jewelry as sort of, we had a character who was going on a journey and the jewelry was an artifact from that story or that adventure. And so we were sort of creating artifacts from whatever her next adventure was. So for me, it's always sort of been about storytelling. And then the spirituality part of it, yes, I think for me, I've always sort of believed in something else and believed in an energy that sort of drives us and balances things out. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm very interested in religion, all religions, and I'm interested in the stories and the mythology that is similar throughout religion. I think that the ideas that bring us together and finding these similar stories and similar symbolism throughout the world through different religions is sort of such an interesting thing because it just sort of shows how much we're all the same and how similar and how we're more similar than we are different.
Yeah.
And I love exploring those sort of symbols and stories in my jewelry.
Well, and I love also the history of jewelry. I mean, I think every culture in the world adorned themselves.
I love, you know, all of the stories that go into everything and the symbolism. I was talking to a friend of mine the other night that I ran into who lives in Charleston. And he works on really, really, really expensive mirrors and stained glass. And he travels all over the place. I mean, they make everything in Charleston, but they travel all over to install. You know, people in New York hire them to. Sure. And he told me he was working on a synagogue in Charleston. And he said that all of the windows were astrological symbols.
Oh, wow.
And it's so cool. And like the symbolism that carries over, you know, from a synagogue to a church, I find really interesting. And then, you know, the stories across all religions that repeat themselves, I find so interesting.
Or in Latin America, the Catholic churches that are built on top of, you know, the temples of.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That stuff's amazing.
And have you ever been to Egypt?
Not yet. It's like on my list. Ethiopia and Egypt are on the list.
You'll freak out about the jewelry.
I recently read this book about Egypt that just got me like really, really like I have to go.
And I cried when I left. One of the tombs I went to, I couldn't stop crying.
Really?
It was the most incredible experience. And everybody around me was sort of like,
are you
okay?
Why do you think you were crying? Like, what was happening?
Because it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. And actually, our guide said that it happens often in this one tomb.
That can happen. It happened to me once at, it was a very long time ago, maybe when I first moved to New York. And it was the only time that all of the Vermeer paintings were together at the Met. It was the only time they'd ever been together. And there was a painting of a woman and a child and I'd never seen it before, and I'd obviously never seen it in person, and I just started bawling. And my friend who was with me was like, are you okay? And I was just like so overwhelmed by the beauty and having to see, I mean, to be able to see Vermeers all together like that and the only time that you ever would, and just the beauty of the painting. And I just started crying. And I was like, what's wrong with me?
And they're mostly portraits, I guess, yes?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think the experience with Clemente, that's interesting.
But this was like, you know, just so, but yeah, I can see how being in the tomb like that, it's such a rare experience. And then to be so overwhelmed by all this beauty would make you cry.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? What else are you going to do? Laugh? Right. That would exactly. be very rude.
Everybody else was really like, whoa.
everyone else was probably just like snapping pictures.
I think it's sort of work.
And you were like bawling.
How did you start to get into the occult and
tarot? Well, the tarot started early, obviously, summer camp. My mom was really interested in psychic readings.
Really?
Uh-huh. Which is totally weird because she's a psychologist, sort of like goes against all that. But, you know, she loved it. And there's a town in Florida called Casadega. It's considered the psychic capital of the world, and they have a psychic university there.
Wow.
So and it's like 30 minutes away from Orlando. So every year we would go to Disneyland when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then we would go to Casadega.
No.
And my mom would get all her readings done.
I love
her tea leaves, her palm, the whole thing. So I've been very interested in that since I was little because I think, you know, my mom rubbed off on me. And then after my father died, a lot of really strange things happened. Like, you know, like people tell you the stories and you're like, that's not a real story.
Right.
But like, for example, at my father's funeral, my father had the most annoying cell phone ring in the entire world. It went dun 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 dun. And so at my father's funeral, we all obviously turned our phones off. And my aunt was sitting next to me. And right before the service started, her phone rang. And it went dun 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 dun.
And that's not her ring.
And that's not even her ring.
Oh, my God.
And she had her phone off, she thought. And she just looked at me and went, that's not my ring. And there were like a few things like that that happened. And then I started to feel like his presence when I was home alone. Mm-hmm. Like I could feel like him touch my shoulder or something. Yeah. And it didn't scare me. I felt really like safe. And, you know, my dad and I didn't have the best relationship. But
did he live with you? You grew up with him?
My parents got divorced when I was 9. Okay. And so, but he lived nearby and they had like split custody or we would go with him on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
But we had definitely like a heated relationship, but I loved him so much. And so to feel his presence was really comforting and interesting to me.
They say that when you lose somebody, you see them 3 times, I think, or you in a dream, you can be like, back with them.
I feel like I've had a lot of dreams about him.
Yeah.
Probably more than 3.
Yeah.
But I've seen him a lot.
And talk to him and say everything's fine or
Yeah. We've had a lot of I've wanted to do a medium, but I think I'm too scared.
Yeah.
Because I had a really good friend who lost his father around the same time as me and he went to a medium and like all this crazy stuff happened. Or he didn't go to the medium. The medium found him and was like, your father is trying to
reach you.
Like that's some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I forget the full story because it was so long ago now, but I've thought about it and I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. I mean, it's been a long time.
When did you have your first astrological reading and when did you get into that?
I've kind of been into that since like college, but I was very, very lucky in the past few years to get a reading from Susan Miller.
Oh yeah. Oh my God.
Who's one of my friend's moms and she hooked me up
And what was it like?
Amazing. She's amazing.
Yeah.
And then I recently had a really good astrology reading in Arizona. It was really good. The lady had like really funny round bottle cap glasses on and like a black turtleneck and like Elsa Peretti jewelry.
Oh,
you
I
know, like very, very like aesthetically like fit a certain type of person. It was an interesting reading. I think I'm overdue for another one. But I think that a lot of that stuff is really fascinating to me. But I think in the last little bit, I've been much more focused on meditation and introspection. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Than I have been on turning to other people for information. And I find that you get the most information that
from yourself.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
if you're listening,
which it's really hard because your brain won't shut up about really unnecessary things, or you know. So that's been an interesting journey for me, as meditating and working on training my brain to be present and quiet. And that's hard as a business owner and as a designer and as a Pisces
and a New Yorker
sort of finding that space and allowing yourself to take that space is definitely a challenge and something I'm actively working on every day.
Meditate every day?
I meditate every day, sometimes twice a day. Even when I don't have a good session, like even when I have 20 minutes where I can't turn my brain off, I still feel grateful for the time I was able to take for myself.
Yeah.
I know that sounds hokey, but
no.
You know, I think it's very important for everyone to be able to take a little bit of time for themselves and like breathe and give yourself some space.
Yeah.
And I know it's really hard, especially people with kids. It's like, I don't have kids, but I know so many of my friends are like,
but you
I don't have
a business.
I have a business, so I feel like I have a million kids. But I feel like I have friends where I'm like, you got to meditate. And they're like, I don't know when I'm going to meditate. Like, you know, the kids wake up at like 6 and they're already screaming. And I think, yeah, it must be so hard, but you'll appreciate it that much more when you do carve out the time.
Well, I have to say with perimenopause comes a lot of insomnia, but I have really enjoyed having the insomnia. I don't know what switched in my brain to appreciate it and meditate through it, but I'll just get up and spend 20 minutes meditating and
so it's, good
yeah and it's 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning.
I do that I have what I call my witching hours. And it's usually between 3 and 5. I'll just wake up, I'm just like up, and so I try, if that happens, to meditate for 20 minutes, and usually I'll be able to fall back to sleep. And if I can't,
because it clears out whatever the things that wake you up,
because usually you're spiraling, that's why you woke up.
Exactly.
But the real trick, if that doesn't work, I take a bath.
One of the things I do a lot of salt baths.
Yeah.
And especially from working, and I would think for you and with jewelry, it's important. But with it, working in retail, people's energies get on you.
Yeah.
And in
you.
And I think I've scrubbed my solar plexus with salt almost every night.
You want to draw everything out.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I told you last night that, you know.
And that's a Pisces thing too, I think.
Yeah. Well, also retail. Pisces need to be in water all the time. All the time.
Yeah.
It's a thing. I mean, maybe it's not. Maybe everyone needs to be in water all the time.
Well, you're also Cancer. And
yeah, I'm water, water. I'm water, water, fire, I think. Yes. Yeah. So I feel like for me, like I was saying to you last night when I did that event and I was reading customers' tarot cards, which was an amazing, amazing experience, just meeting all these women. And realizing that everyone's going through something and talking it out with them and seeing if there was any way I could help them through the reading was really special. But at the end, I couldn't talk anymore. I got home and I laid in a bath and I just was like, Matt, don't talk to me. Like, I just absorbed so many people's energy and life stories and I just need to clear it and get back to me.
Yeah.
So that was definitely an interesting experience.
When I was in Arizona, by the way, the one of the readers told me that I was an HSP, which is a highly sensitive person.
Oh,
yeah. And it was such a relief. I mean, I was sort of like, okay. And until I read about it, it was such a relief for me because I had felt that way my whole life, and that things affected me differently. And crying all the time.
Yes. I one time had an employee tell me, and she was like a really close employee, like my right hand. She was like, "You just feel things so much more than other people feel them. Like things, like when you're happy, you're so happy. But when you're upset, like the things that upset you, they upset you so deeply."
Yeah. Being a human is heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. But I also feel that I feel very upset about things in a way that maybe other people are able to compartmentalize, which I find is common maybe with a lot of women, but also mostly Pisces, where you, if something's upsetting you in one part of your life, a lot of people are good at being like, okay, that's unfortunate, and they can still enjoy and do other things. But with me, it's all mixed together.
Right.
You know, it's hard to separate. I think that when I first started the jewelry line, I talked about how the jewelry was protection. It was armor. I think we all want to feel safe, obviously, but I think for me, I need it so much. And I don't know. It's such a, some people really like to go on dangerous adventures. I mean, I do like to do that sometimes too, but I don't know. There's something about feeling safe and protected that's very important.
Certainly retail, but also just in fashion for me. I need to really get ready for that and prepare and protect before I go into that world. And
that world is brutal.
It's brutal.
It's a really interesting world because it's a world that was created to make women feel happy and confident.
Yeah.
And yet the inner workings of that world are so tough.
Mm-hmm.
And competitive, mm-hmm. and intense, and so that is a thing that weighs on me sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a hard world.
We always ask, what did you wear to the prom?
Oh my God, you're gonna die. Okay.
I'm so excited.
So I went to two different proms.
Of course.
I went to my boyfriend's prom, who went to a different high school than me. And then I went to my prom. The first prom, I had found some picture of Gwyneth Paltrow in her like pink Oscar dress. And so
Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah. So I found this dress. I don't know where I got it. Like probably at the mall.
Uh-huh.
And it was
What's the department store in South Florida?
It was Burdines.
Burdines.
It was Burdines. And then there was Macy's and Bloomingdale's.
But Burdines was the thing.
Burdines was the Florida thing at the time. And I got this, like, pink dress that was, like, too big on me everywhere.
Well, I think it was on too big for her, too.
Yeah, that was why I did it. And it just looked terrible. And my boyfriend was like, you are not wearing that to my prom.
You showed it to him before?
Well, we wore it to my prom.
Oh, right.
Our proms were, like, a couple days apart.
Got it. Did you have pink shoes, too?
I had pink shoes. You know,
jewelry?
Yeah, I wore, like, a pink beaded choker.
Pretty.
That, like, I beaded myself.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of it was made myself.
Right.
You know? He was like, you're not wearing that. So.
And by the way, did he do a matching, like, a pink?
No. No. But I actually posted a picture of my.
The second one.
Second prom outfit. So then I convinced my parents to let me get a different prom outfit. And so let me like preface this by telling you that I had a job for 3 years at a high school. I worked at Blockbuster Video.
Cool. That's awesome.
And I saved up a lot of money. And they were like, if you want to get another prom dress, you can pay for it. We'll take you. So there was a girl at my prom who was wearing this crazy, like, I want to say it was like almost like a Renaissance fair look. Like a corset with like a satin skirt and like a matching, like it was just so bad.
Okay.
But I loved it.
Yes.
And so I asked her where she got it and she told me.
And where was it?
It was called Belinda's Designs in Miami.
Oh my God.
And my stepdad drove me to Miami and I like had all my like Blockbuster money saved up.
That is amazing.
And I got pretty much the exact outfit she wore. Like I had no qualms.
And you were like, okay.
I was like, I want this outfit.
And she wasn't going to come to your prom either.
No, I was like.
And what color?
I'm going to pull up the picture. It was a cream corset that had lavender ribbons in the back.
Pretty.
With a lavender skirt.
That is gorgeous.
No, it was not. And a lavender dyeable shoes. And a lace choker.
Lordy.
Cream lace choker that I made myself.
Oh my God.
It was bad.
I love
and
in
I
your
had,
hair.
I had like purple butterfly clips in my hair. Are you ready?
Yeah. No, that is. Look at you. You look like you're 50. You look so. I mean, you.
I look 50?
You do not look 18. I'm going to tell you that. My Lord. It's pretty though. It's 80 what? That is amazing.
That.
Look at the pocketbook, the matching little
it's terrible,
fabric
right?
bag. No, Pamela, you look gorgeous.
I didn't look 18.
You did not look 18. I mean, you look 20 years older than you do now.
I know.
I'm serious.
Thank you. I've been working
exactly.
on my skin.
You're exactly aging backwards.
But like, yeah, there's like purple butterfly clips.
Oh my God.
And then my mom in her bathrobe is like a really good, like the Florida interiors are so good in that picture.
I love.
But yeah, so this is what I wore to my boyfriend's prom.
That's amazing. And did he love it?
I think so.
Was he like, oh yeah, this is yeah. the white corset?
Yeah, that. So I had two proms, and both were really silly. Pink and purple.
I love
like,
it.
I'm like the least girly person, but I wore pink and purple to my proms.
You're beautiful. You are. Thank you. You are very. You're girly.
I'm more girly than people think.
I think you are.
For the person who created the talon cuff, exactly. I'm kind of, and all the snake jewelry, I'm pretty girly.
Well, you're one of my favorite girls.
Thank you. You're one of my favorite girls. I love you.
I love you too. Thank you, Pam.
You're welcome. Thank you.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda.